As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
As I've said many times, we protect the copyright of all of our guests. You can go to Evercore ISA to find the daily thoughts of Ed Hyman. I get no greater response. Can you send me Ed's note? Can you send me Ed's? Please, Tom.
You're putting him out of business,
Oriole tickets.
Tom.
Oriole tickets. Can you send me Ed's note? No, I can't. And what you need to know is on page 6 of the note, he's talking about the glory of BAAs coming in, a gorgeous spread. That's the Damien world. But on page 4 is classic Ed Hyman. I've been too resistant to this time is different thinking. He goes on to say he's grappling with any number of issues here about the inflation impulse. Ed Hyman, this time is different or is it not?
I'll let you know next time I see you. I'm really struggling with this. I don't think it's different this time. It's always different. But when you look back at it, I've been through 7 recessions. Everyone has been associated with an inverted yield curve, and there have been no false signals. And so, but you know, live and learn. Maybe it is different this time.
Is it because of the pandemic and fiscal impulse, plus the overlay of an immigration impulse in the
AI,
job market?
AI in there. So the impulse from the pandemic was we put all this money supply in the system and all the checks, which of course go as a payer, and some of that money's still in the system. You know, if they're paying the golfers, the women golfers more.
Hold on. Ed, you know,
more.
I have to ask you this question. You know, you're on a deserted island, you know, a small island like the Dominican Republic, for example. And, you know, you have one indicator, one financial market indicator to that you can access. What would that be? Like, what indicator do you lean on right now in this market to look at? What's your favorite?
You're leading the witness here. You know it. So, hands down, credit spreads win. I do a lot of econometric work. They scream at you. And when they go down, it says things are pretty good. And when they go up, it says things are pretty bad.
Yeah.
And right now, spreads are tightening up. They're coming down.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, it's beginning to be spring here in the tri-state area, and everything's looking pretty good. But spreads are really critical. I watched the BAA spread. I don't know if that's one that
you course,
watched.
No, it's a financial condition. It's one of the primary inputs. I mean, the other thing I think, Tom, that we have to kind of look at is inflation. And, you know, some of our guests, you know, Sebastian, who was on earlier, he would argue that it's the one-year U.S. Treasury break-even rate, which has basically been guiding markets. So I guess it's kind of a tug of war. Until you get that gap risk, that upside move in spreads, is it going to be an inflation story here in the U.S., or is it going to be more growth? Is it more Mag 7?
You mean inflation going up or going down?
Going up, staying high and sticky. Yeah.
So at the moment, it's staying high. You know, my feeling is that things are slowing. That's my You won't have anybody on your show here as old as I am.
Well,
hold on.
Wait, well, you're looking at me.
I know I'm looking at you because I'm a lot
Julian
older.
Robertson once said exactly the same thing to me.
Yeah. I
said,
oh, wow.
We miss him. We miss him every day.
Gosh, me
too. To your disinflation point, and what's important here, folks, is the micro data that Ed Hyman looks at. You have a fabulous chart of multifamily units booming back to the 1970s when you and I wore wider lapels. I mean, the basic line is Jay Powell getting a fake out here. If you were at AEA, Economic Club of New York, and you're there asking Jerome Powell a question after he gives a speech, and you're gonna say, hey, Chairman Powell, what about the overcapacity of multifamily? Is there going to be a disinflationary tendency in rents, in OER, and other shelter ideas?
Sure. I mean, it feels to me like it's coming just as sure as I'm sitting here. There's a huge record number of apartments under construction right now. It takes a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be hitting the market this year and next year. Should put down pressure on rents, which has been one of the stickier parts of it. But as a detail, it'll influence the numbers a lot. But the real question is what happens to wages. And if wages slow, then inflation will slow.
Do you see that in your micro data?
I do. And other people as well. But we survey temp and perm employment agencies
every
week and ask them what's the wage pressure. And that's been easing off. Our analysts, which I meet with every morning, report wages are slowing a little bit.
Yep.
And so that's there, but that's a slow-moving train.
In
the meantime, you know, oil is knocking up.
Yeah, well, that was exactly what I wanted to ask you about. Commodity prices, the vibrancy of the U.S. consumer. I mean, given mortgage rates going higher, I mean, I know spreads have stayed tight, but mortgage rates are going higher. Tom will talk to you about the 30-year fixed. I mean, Ed, you know, talk to us about the resiliency of the U.S. consumer and what that means for employment here in the U.S.
Well, those are the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Employment drives the U.S. consumer. But the mortgage rate... I'm trying to figure out what to do. And the mortgage rate backing up is definitely going to put pressure on housing.
Right.
We survey home builders every week. It's an excellent window on what's happening there. And that's come off a little bit. And when mortgage rates go up, you know, that weakens. And so we'll see if that impacts or not.
You have been committed to Midtown Manhattan. You're an institution. Your thoughts on this round of commercial real estate debacle that we see in New York City and nationwide?
You know, so far it's been okay. Every tightening cycle, and this is my 13th tightening cycle, each of the 13, there have been seven that have had recessions.
What cycle does this feel most like to you? Does this remind you of 1990, 1998?
It's like this is its own beast.
It's its own beast,
It's its own post-pandemic beast.
Yeah. So far it's been resilient. I will say that every cycle feels resilient until it stops.
Right.
And you can't look out the window and tell how the economy is going to be doing tomorrow. You can tell how it's doing today.
I got one time for one question. We're out of time, Ed Hyman. You fly out to Cupertino, you take a cup of coffee with Tim Cook. What do you tell him about the equity spirit of America? With all the challenges Mr. Cook has at Apple, what do you tell him about the stock market, about the idea of finding value over 3 years, 5 years, a decade? Yeah.
Well, in the short term, you know, I think the market is now going to be under pressure for a bit. But when you ask that question about the longer term, the U.S. economy is pretty good. And, you know, compared to other economies, it's really good. And so I'd put a smiley face.
Ed Hyman, thank you so much for coming in.
It was great to see you.
Today with Evercore ISI, Ed Hyman, who's done so much for market economics.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Sebastian Page joins us now, and I think it will Danoff over at Fortress Lynch up at Fidelity with 55% of his fund in 10 stocks. That's not the Sebastian Page way, is it?
No, it's not. And the thing about the freezer and the oven, Tom, is that investors too often look at average correlations over time. So right now in the markets, you know, bonds and stocks can go down together. We've learned that in 22. But when investors do their strategic asset allocation studies, they just look back 10 years and average across all these different regimes. So my point is, you know, as a statistician who said, I have my head in the freezer and my feet in the oven, and on average, I feel great.
Right.
And that's kind of the mistake we make when we use long-term correlations.
But the problem, Sebastian, is most of our listeners and viewers have their head in NVIDIA and their feet in Microsoft. We've never, honestly, folks, we've never, we just did the solar eclipse.
Sebastian,
Phil Carrey has never seen this, the late Phil Carrey.
Sebastian, my daughter Hayden, she's on the way to carpool. She's in traffic right now. She owns the Mag 7, but you're talking about a broadening of equity market performance, right? The average stock, I believe, in U.S. equities is down, 13%? I mean, talk to us a little bit about this broadening. What's gonna drive performance here?
Yeah, you know, you can use the same analogy for that question, right? It's a tale of two markets. If you go back to the end of 21, right, before the world fell apart and we had 550 basis points of hikes and two wars, and you ask, you know, what will happen to stocks? No one really would have predicted the S&P being up 11%. However, MSCI, All Country World Index, equal weighted, is down 13% since then.
This is really important, and Doug Kass led on this down in Florida. He's mourning John Sterling retiring. And Mr. Kass had a chart this morning that showed the Standard & Poor's 483.
Right.
They're back to where they were, and I think it's early 23. And just as Mr. Page said, they're back really to where we were in 2021.
Well, Tom, it's been that lack of participation in value. And the question I think that Sebastian and I both have is, what's going to drive people to, you know, reach in their pockets, move out of growth and into value? What do you think is going to be that catalyst, Sebastian?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we are playing the broadening by overweighting value, but we're actually neutral between large and small stocks because small stocks have been so sensitive to higher rates, and we expect rates to stay higher than expectations. So why value? Because, you know, Tom, things can be cheap and they can be cheap for a long time and you buy and it's a trap. European stocks versus U.S. stocks. For the last 10 years, value stocks versus growth stocks. So you need to ask, what is the catalyst?
What is the catalyst for value to move?
So we look at three factors, macro, fundamentals, and sentiment. And to me, those are starting to align. Yeah. On the macro, you have rising oil prices and pressures on commodities in general.
Yeah,
that favors value. Higher rates tend to favor value, although the case is not as clear cut. But you can check the macro catalysts box.
Right.
On the fundamentals, it's really interesting. If you look at a chart of year-over-year expected earnings growth, by the end of this year, it's expected that value stocks earnings will actually be growing faster year over year than growth stocks. So you kind of have a fundamental catalyst. Our stock analysts, I'm an asset allocator, but I like to get input from stock analysts from the bottom up. They're talking to industrial CEOs, and they're hearing some optimism. Well, PMI going above 50. Right?
Sebastian, I'm a market strategist, so I like to look at that. I like to look at liquidity. I like to look at sentiment. I like
Lisa,
to look at
flows. We're surrounded by criminals.
Talk to us about, because I mean, I read your note, and you make a great point. What, 92nd percentile is the differential between flows into growth over value. Is that right?
Right. So, Damien, that's the third catalyst. Right. So you have macro, you have fundamental. And yeah, if you look at the
positioning,
relative
sentiment flows.
Relative positioning, the flows into growth mutual funds versus value mutual funds. 92nd percentile on a yearly basis. So when you look at sentiment, usually you want to lean against the wind.
Okay, we got time for one more question. We got some
container rates. We got to talk about container rates, right? I mean, container rates. I mean, Shanghai to New York, $3,000 to $5,000, right? Is that not right?
Can I just
Did you not read the notes, Tom? What do you want? Come on.
Please, container rates.
Have another cup of coffee.
What does that mean for investors? Why should we be concerned about shipping rates between New York and Shanghai, Sebastian?
It's part of the mosaic of higher inflation. 4.7% wage growth, you know, low unemployment. I'm gonna pause here and let Tom ask a question.
I think he's drinking. He's drinking his tea. He has bubble tea.
To the T. Rowe Price folks invented analyst debate.
They did it. What we do.
PIMCO stole it from the people. This is, you know, McNamee and way back. Okay. What is the biggest source of debate in T. Rowe Price meetings right now?
So I like to say that we're aggressively neutral between stocks and bonds, Tom.
Right.
The biggest source of debate right now in my asset allocation committee, I have bulls and I have bears, and that's the most important asset allocation question.
Right.
The bulls are saying, look, earnings are coming back up and rates are coming down over time. There's a place for the market to broaden. The bears are just looking at deceleration, the dynamics of deceleration,
right,
the lagged effects of higher rates, and you know, all the risks in the system from a deceleration.
20 seconds. Orioles look loaded this year.
You know, I live in Baltimore, so I'm going to be...
Of course, you're talking about freight rates. You live in Baltimore. Yeah.
I'm going to be completely unbiased. I'm going to say, Tom, you know, for the book, thank you for helping the sales.
Okay.
I give all the proceeds to the T. Rowe Foundation, but there might be an Oriole ticket.
Okay, there we go. That's what we like. It'll be better than what I get from
Mike Bloomberg.
Sebastian Page from Baltimore, home of the Orioles. Thank you so much. He's a T. Rowe Price.
Traffic on I-95.
Lisa, can you get Mr. Page to the door here? He's coming in. It's been an extraordinary 24 hours in streaming, in Hollywood, in media, and nobody really has any understanding of where this is leading. Craig Moffett and Michael Nathanson are definitive in thinking about the bigger picture and the view forward. They recently had an extraordinary note, a compare and contrast of Walt Disney of Glendale and a firm called Comcast, with all of their work with Universal and with of the NBC franchise. And then there's Paramount and all that's going on there. Michael Nathanson now on our fractured media. Where are these companies, Michael Nathanson, in 3 years?
Morning, Tom. The companies will have all very different outcomes, right? So Disney and Comcast have enough scale, diversification. They will be fine because of their, you know, for Disney Parks and Comcast cable broadband. The rest of them, consolidation has to happen, right? You need to take out capacity. You need to reduce costs. So we're waiting to see how Paramount, Warner's, Fox, AMC networks all come together or don't, right?
Right.
So it's obvious that it needs to be consolidation. We don't know how it gets done because the personalities in place here, but this can't last, right?
You know, I look at just overnight, Daniel Thomas writing it up in the FT on Mark Thompson, who saved the New York Times. He invented the digital New York Times. And I read the article very carefully, Michael, and I guess there's a plan there, but Mark Thompson says, basically, we're flying blind. And the only thing he circles back to is what we're going to, which is YouTube. Is it a YouTube world in 5 years, whether it's Mark Thompson or Tom Keene? I mean, is that what the audience wants, or is there something the audience wants from Disney?
Okay, Tom, it's fascinating. A lot of your listeners may not know this, but YouTube has more time spent on connected TVs than Netflix. So maybe you know this because you're now Bloomberg's on YouTube, but YouTube on the television is bigger than Netflix. So YouTube has a place in that world, as does Netflix, as does Disney. But yes, more and more content's moving to YouTube. And the challenge is for people who get paid for production, paid for content. How do you win in a world where YouTube is the dominant provider of distribution? It's a really hard model for everyone else.
Michael, Tom loves to talk about Hollywood. He loves to talk about streaming. Yeah. Those are the glamour industries. I like to talk about the $50 billion theme park industry. It's boring. It's utterly dominated by Disney. Talk to me about where I should be taking my kids during the holidays. Should I be going to Universal, Disney? And what part of the equation is the theme park? Because I imagine it's getting quite large.
Okay. Good question. Before the pandemic, before streaming wars, parks were half of Disney's profits. Now it's three quarters. And Disney is going to put an extra $60 billion of capital to build out more and more attractions, especially overseas. But out of the back, in the second place, here comes Universal, owned by Comcast. And next year, they have a massive park, Epic. And it will have five different gates. That's what we call them, five different gates. And they'll have a Harry Potter installation. You're going to have How to Train Your Dragons. You have Nintendo, which would be a big attraction. So they're trying to close the gap with Disney. And somewhere middle, about a year from now, this will be all the talk. Tom will have me on every day talking about the impending theme park wars. Because up to this point, it's been Disney's world. They've done a great job. But we're really interested to see what happens next year when Comcast gets in the game with a much bigger park and a challenge to Disney in Orlando.
Tom, did you hear that? Even with ESPN and ABC, it's theme parks are 73.3% of Disney's EBITDA.
You and Sweeney are on the same page on this, and Nathanson's led on it.
I mean, I like fast rides, but I don't know if I like them that much.
I'm watching reruns of Frozen, and you guys are out spending $500 a day at a theme park.
So, Michael, where should we put our money here? What do we like better? If we're an equity investor, is it Disney? Is it Comcast?
Yeah.
Is it another player?
Okay, so Craig Moffett covers Comcast. We have a buy in Comcast, and I cover Disney. And we upgraded Disney when Bob Iger came back. And it took a while, but it's been an okay call, not a great call. Our feeling is, Disney has, because of the streaming investments, they have a lot to catch up on profitability. Their businesses are still losing money in streaming, and Netflix has 25% margins. So our view is that Disney has a way to go in Netflix profitability.
Right.
We like Comcast. And then Tom will ask me, we do like Meta and Alphabet even here. Those have been, we've been lucky to expand our coverage to cover some of the Magnificent Seven. And those two names
right.
are great for us. And we continue going there.
When I come in the morning, folks, it's Sweeney's all over this. I'm an amateur hour here. Nathanson knows that as a Yankees fan. I'm amateur.
He lives up here. In Scarsdale.
But I look, Michael, I do a two standard deviation technical trend on Warner Brothers Discovery. And I'm sorry, as a metaphor for the industry, there seem to be more sellers than buyers. When does a bid slam in on WBD or whatever the detritus is of Paramount? When does the bid come into your world?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Robert Fishman and our team covers those names. Tom, the challenge is, what is the value of their linear network businesses, right? So if you are a private equity bidder, what's the minimum amount of money you want to spend on linear networks that you will not be burned, right? And every year, because of cord cutting and advertising pressures, linear profits go down. So until you hit that floor, it could be 3x EBITDA, Tom, which is like,
wow,
extraordinarily, that's a tiny, tiny number, given these guys were 15x EBITDA a decade ago. It could be a 3x EBITDA, you feel some comfort. But the revision trends are so negative in linear cable networks because of cord cutting, that it's hard for smart money to say, I want to make a stand here.
Right.
It's a falling knife. Every year has been a falling knife. Right. So until you see a bottom on valuation, which could be some time away from
Netflix is doing a restructuring. Shock of shocks, they want to listen to the customer. Michael Nathanson spent umpteen years. Michael Nathanson's been doing this so long, it was back when the Yankees won. Michael.
I know.
Now they're listening.
I have a Yankees picture behind me.
Yeah. How original, Michael, to listen to the customer. Who's listening to the customer best?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I think Netflix has the technology to surface shows that we may not think about, like Suits or Young Sheldon, that people then start watching, Tom. And we've debated this for many years. What is king? Content. And I think what Netflix has, the platform is king. And I think they're listening to the customer, but in different ways, Tom, right? They're not they're not doing the old fashioned, hey, I saw this person on Broadway, I want to put them in a TV show. Their algorithm and their data is surfacing what you want to watch. And I think that's been the biggest change here. Whereas the old media companies still listen to the customer the old-fashioned way, but Netflix and YouTube, to your question, just have better technology skills, and that is making their content stickier.
Michael, I haven't been to either, and I have to just go back to it. You know, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and then you hear about this Nintendo. You have to hit the blue button, Tom. But theme parks. I mean, I'm just curious. You know, Island of Adventure. You know, do you visit these places? I mean, what works? What's different than the days where I used to go to Disney World? I used to go to Epcot. You know, I mean, maybe I'd go to MGM. I mean, what's different about these new parks?
Okay, so I do go to Disney very often, because we cover Disney, right? The parks have gone. This is the biggest challenge they have, is right when gaming has become so technologically advanced, and 3D movies have become so good. You have to bring the customer in a different way. They've become much more immersive, right? So they become these lands upon themselves, right? So it's no longer just a theme park with a restaurant and a bar. You've moved into a world, right? So if you head into the Star Wars experience, they're trying to make you feel like you're in Star Wars, and same with Harry Potter. So they're just making this immersive universe experience, and that's right. The biggest challenge is to take you away for a day from the world that you know into this new world.
I just want to go out to Anaheim and sit in the teacups with the young cherubs and try to remember this. Michael Nathanson, I got to make some buy, hold, sell money here. What's your single best buy right now?
Well, it's funny. When the year started, Tom, we said Roku short, and that's gone down 40%. So not Roku anymore. We've been saying Disney here on the back of, you know, the Iger win versus Peltz. And we just think the profitability opportunity in streaming is pretty good. And the market feels heavy to me. I don't know how you all feel. You know, we've been pushing Meta and Alphabet, but it just feels like, you know, that's had their time. And I think we're going to look back at other names.
So what's the next step for Facebook? What's the next? I mean, I'm looking at growth fund portfolios that have 11, 12, 13% in Meta. What's the next step for Mr. Zuckerberg and Facebook?
The next step is just more of the same, Tom, right? So they're using technology. Again, your question about listening to the customer, they're using AI, there's that word, to deliver more and more engaging experiences to you. And they're using AI to help advertisers target better, right? So it's just more of the same. But you had an extraordinary opportunity where you had costs coming out quickly and then acceleration of revenues. It was amazing margin expansion last year. It's going to be harder to see the same expansion in 24. So we'd like it, but it was a layup last year because you had cost cutting and you had acceleration on top line. It's as good as it gets. And I think that's the challenge, is we think it's a fine stock to own and the outlook is bright. But after last year, it's just harder to see the love for that name that, you know, from where we are now.
Michael, I mean, look, the last question I have really, I mean, it has to do with sports. It has to do with ESPN. The NBA rights are coming up. I mean, how involved are you in where we are in that process? I hear it's still behind closed doors, but I mean, you've got to be looking at that and thinking, what comes next for Disney, for ESPN?
Yeah, we're highly involved in thinking about that. So we're assuming that the NBA stays on ESPN and stays on Turner. Second cable home.
Interesting.
But the NBA is going to look to find a home in streaming land. Is it Amazon? Is it Netflix? The NBA is very focused on also globalization. They have, I think, a third of their all-stars are from non-US countries. Right. So they have a really strong international story. So the question is, when Disney signs the NBA and ESPN signs it, what is left for them to not sign, right? They have a UFC deal. They have the ability to maybe not stick with baseball. Mm-hmm. So we're really interested in what happens after NBA, because ESPN can't have everything. Someone has to be thrown over.
Right.
And that's the next story for us, right? And can I just say, the New York Rangers, this is our year. Let's hope and let's pray, because we deserve it this year.
You can come back. I mean, this is great. Michael Nathanson in the blue L.L. Bean vest, just like Damian Cesar in the blue L.L. Bean vest. Michael Nathanson there with Disney, I think, is his single best buy.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
A daily look at the front page. It's a Lisa Mateo hour. Lisa, my people briefed me on the newspapers today. Okay. Wow. What do you got?
All right. Citadel's Ken Griffin. He wants to bring this massive New York City skyscraper. The city's hoping it's going to bring more workers back to the office.
53rd and Park.
350 Park Avenue. Very good. Yeah. Very good. You've done your
nice
homework.
To work there.
62 stories. Going to be completed in 2032, supposedly. It's going to have this public concourse, but the thing is a draw. It can house over 6,000 jobs. The question is, you know, will people come back? They're hoping that it will, and that it'll also help revitalize the neighborhood because a lot of the businesses shut down in the area.
I have an issue here in that, does it give us new jobs, or does it just pull Damien jobs from B and C class properties over to One Vanderbilt or the Griffin Tower? I mean, the Diamond Tower is all J.P. Morgan, but you get the picture.
Well, this is not the building that's right next to St. Patrick's Cathedral, is it, where they purchased the air rights?
Yes, correct.
Oh, this
that
is it.
That
okay.
Is it.
Yeah, see, then I'm a little against this because, you know, St. Patty's Cathedral, I don't need shade on St. Patty's. I mean, you know, it's a, you know, for me, that's iconic.
They're getting a big chunk of money.
Okay,
well, then I'm for it. Jobs are good. Jobs are good.
We should explain to our worldwide audience that in New York, when you build a tower, there's a thing called air rights where philanthropic and religious institutions that own those buildings get substantial, fees as we build our
150 million, I believe.
Was just going to say 150 million.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping Vetville wants air rights over the house. So,
we'll see how that works
somebody
out.
Somebody build something. Next.
Okay. I didn't realize, I mean, you would probably know this better than I. In China, residents who are in steep debt, they're getting blocked from making certain purchases. So this is from the Wall Street Journal. They're saying that in Beijing, they're seizing their salaries, restricting them from getting government jobs. This is if they're in debt. Wow. They're not paying their bills. They're blocking them from access to high-speed trains, air travel, a lot of them forbidden to access those expensive insurance policies. They're told they aren't allowed to go on vacation,
doesn't
stay in
nice
like hotels.
Doesn't sound like prosperity for all to me, Lisa.
So,
I mean, that is...
And if they do, they can be arrested, too. They can be detained.
Impassioned discussion with Nora Rubini about this once, about old world versus new world workout of bad debt.
Yeah.
And the answer is America's unique. Nora was heated.
The dollar's
about
unique.
This.
That's what makes it unique.
The U.S., we clear markets. There's an economist, Friedrich Hayek, that was pretty good at this. But the idea is if you can't clear a market and off the pandemic,
it's the legal
that's what
system,
China's
right.
dealing
it's property
with.
Rights. I mean, that's really what we talk about. And China, unfortunately, is just not giving investors much confidence that they enforce property rights.
Is China clear in the market now? Are they beyond the pandemic?
No, not yet. Not quite yet. Not at all.
I didn't realize, unlike the U.S., China doesn't allow most people to declare bankruptcy.
Yeah,
so that's the American
distinction.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
Okay, Washington Post. More women are getting a boost in prize money at the first major of the year, women's golf. So women are getting some more money. This weekend, Chevron Championship, it takes place. They're increasing the total purse to $7.9 million. That's up from $5.2 million last year. So we're getting a little boost.
Yeah.
This week, Chevron winner is going to take on $1.2 million. Last year, the winner took home $780,000.
Do they have a Caitlin Clark?
You know, Vu, I forget her. I don't remember her full name. But, they've got some really talented players in the women's. And, again, the focus is always going to be on the men's. I mean, that's where all the highlights are.
Yeah, but I remember Nancy Lopez getting it done.
I mean, there's no Annika Sorenstam, and just to be completely honest with you. But, I mean, there are plenty of up-and-coming players, some really great players, you know. I mean, so it's fun to watch.
Okay. The Masters was a good bounce.
Masters was fun, yeah. No, but, I mean, let me tell you, some of the conditions there, were unbelievable. Day two was tough.
What do you think? How's your game? How's your game starting to spring on you? You over Top Golf working on it?
It's iffy. I'm working on my. I'm trying a new swing.
Eight hours a
new
week.
Grip.
At Top Golf. Oh, new grip. Please.
The putting's there though.
Are
the flag stick's going to be there this year.
What's his name that came in second or third? Are you using the bigger, thicker grip?
I like a bigger, thicker grip. Tom, okay. Thanks for. Thanks for that.
Okay. I don't, you know, what do I know?
It's okay. Okay. Bigger and thicker grips are.
All I know, I sit in a bar with
all the rage.
I sit in a bar with a drink in my hand and I just go Titleist and I'm like, oh my God, Lisa, next.
I'm not getting into golf either. Okay, this is the last one. Okay, are you familiar with Axe body spray?
Of course.
Okay, the men use it, right? It's to help attract the ladies, okay? It's a nice smelling body spray.
Like
but
an olive oil kind of, not, like coffee
definitely
gloss.
Definitely not olive oil.
Okay.
A lot of people wear body sprays, though, and most, correct. I mean, in most emerging markets, I mean, body spray is a big thing.
But here's a new market for it, okay? So the Axe body spray, now it's being used by sheep farmers to keep rams from fighting. So this is a whole new market for this body spray, okay? You have the sheep farmers who are using it because it actually masks the hormones to get the boys to stop butting those heads,
right.
Okay? So they get out of control with that. You have the Axe Africa, or in Lynx, it's called Lynx, actually, in the UK, or Lynx Africa. Those are the scents.
Are you kidding me?
No, and it gets even, they even use it on the
good smelling
females.
Sheep.
You can use it on the females too, not just the males, because it convinces the mother to get these orphan lambs because it distracts them. They're used
like
to using
the,
their scent and they like the orphan lambs.
The Axe Green Geranium Premium Deodorant Body Spray.
Yes. They're using it for sheep and to stop the rams.
You know, she's
let me tell you, I use Axe pomade, which I feel, and the Shine, the blue one. I love it.
You
it's
do.
I oh, absolutely. That's my only product.
Have you tried the Axe Africa?
My only
then?
Product. No, yeah. Not the spray. I use the pomade for my hair.
Oh,
we got
yeah.
Ed Hyman
I still have
coming
my hair.
Up,
yes.
And the YouTube audience is going to be more interested in the Royal Pineapple Premium Deodorant Body Spray than what Ed Hyman.
Some really good smelling sheep out there.
Lisa, this was twisted today.
It was, but I always got to end you with that kicker, you know. You got to end you by saying, what did she just say?
Lisa Mateo, thank you for the newspapers.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.